Welcome to In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. Recently, the group Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, an environmental organization made up of Utah doctors, held a press conference to raise concerns about the way mosquito populations are being controlled in the Salt Lake area. Here's Brian Mensch, the group's president, explaining the thrust of why they were sounding the alarm.
The term mosquito abatement refers to numerous strategies to control mosquitoes, some of which are benign, but some are definitely not. When it comes to spraying pesticides, the term abatement is a euphemism, and we should not let that term obscure the fact that this is a practice that spreads biologic poison throughout our environment. In recent years, numerous medical experts and entire medical societies have made strong position statements regarding the danger to humans of even small doses of toxic chemicals like pesticides, and their link to obesity, cancer, heart disease, birth defects, reproductive pathology, and neurologic and brain disorders. Animal studies show that by damaging DNA, pesticides can even harm the health of future generations. Public policy is badly lagging behind the science, and great harm is being done that shouldn't be and doesn't have to be.
The word pesticide is very encompassing, almost too broad a category to understand without parsing it. But just in general, pesticide means any product, usually a chemical or biological agent, that gets rid of anything you might call a pest. The side in pesticide is the same side in homicide. So if homicide means to kill a person, pesticide generally means to kill a pest. But what is a pest? Well, it's just some organism that we don't want for one reason or another. Pesticides, because they are designed to kill or otherwise incapacitate living things, have been, well, controversial for a long time. Though there wasn't much in the way of synthetic pesticide use, that is to say, chemicals produced synthetically in a lab, until the 1940s and 1950s. And then their use exploded.
For just about every human on Earth, pesticides now contaminate our air, drinking water, food, and soil. They are detected on Mount Everest, in the deepest parts of the ocean, and in rainfall from the sky. The logical extension is now well documented. Pesticides are universally found in the blood and urine of almost all human beings everywhere, in amniotic fluid, newborn babies, and in domestic drinking water worldwide. A study of contaminants in human breast milk from multiple countries found every milk sample from every country was contaminated with the most common mosquito pesticide and at levels high enough to cause neurologic and endocrine effects.
You may or may not remember that the chemical compound pesticide DDT, which was used a lot until it was banned, had all sorts of negative effects on various organisms. For example, it was found to prevent certain bird species from reproducing. Among other things, the breakdown of the chemical resulted in the thinning of eggshells in peregrine falcons and California condors. And, well, there's a lot more to the story, and a lot of that story was first compiled in the Rachel Carson book Silent Spring. That book talks about biomagnification, or the concentration of toxins upward through the food chain, basically a poison becoming more concentrated as it moves from insects to fish to birds and so on. Anyway, DDT worked in killing pests, but it tended to harm and even kill other things as well. Again, DDT was banned back in the 1970s, though it still persists in our environment in a number of places around the globe. But the doctors who spoke during this press conference say that the types of pesticides in use today have issues that need to be better evaluated, from a potential link to autism that we'll talk about shortly, to the spread of volatile organic compounds that contribute to air pollution. The doctors say that what we're doing to prevent mosquitoes could be worse than simply having the mosquitoes around. And so they're calling for a 2-year moratorium, a pause on spraying for mosquitoes in and around Salt Lake City. So will that moratorium happen?
We're going to continue with our mosquito control program. You know, it's like I said, we follow all the rules, regulations, guidelines from the EPA, the CDC, and we feel it is protecting the citizens of Salt Lake City. My name is Dr. Greg White. I'm the assistant director at the Salt Lake City Mosquito Abatement District.
And he says that government regulators deem the use of these pesticides safe.
All these mosquito control products have gone through many years of evaluation and reevaluation to make sure that they're toxic to the mosquito, but not to other organisms, well, especially humans, right? There's no toxicity in humans because the EPA would not let us be spraying something that's causing people to get sick. And that doesn't make sense. So I'll just read you one statement from the EPA right now about adult mosquito control. And it says, our evaluation of mosquito control products includes assuring that use of such products according to label directions does not pose risks to vulnerable populations, including children and pregnant women. So yeah, they've been evaluated and make sure that they're many hundreds, if not thousandfold safer than where they would see any potential risk.
But environmental and community groups opposed to the continued use of pesticides say that what the EPA allows or calls safe might be lagging behind the research. I asked Dr. White with the Mosquito Abatement District about times in the past where regulatory bodies were maybe delayed in taking action.
Yeah, I think what you're getting at, so yeah, maybe the science wasn't as good a few decades ago, and so there's shown to be some safety issues that weren't known, say back in the 50s when some of these pesticides were first discovered and labeled for use compared to now. So fortunately, what they do is they reevaluate every pesticide every 15 years. And so we always get the latest science at least every 15 years or so. They re-review all the pesticides that are used. And yeah, we do make decisions. There are certain pesticides we prefer to use. Although all of them are labeled safe for use, there's some that were used to control mosquito larvae, that's in the aquatic state, that our district and many other districts decided to stop using because there was more potential for environmental harm to use some of these products. It's called Temifos, and it's not used by our district stopped using that years and years ago.
White also says that the reason we're controlling for mosquitoes is an important one.
I mean, people are getting bit by mosquitoes every year. There's no question about that. People get sick from West Nile virus every year. Some years more than other, but there's definitely cases every year. And those are all very real cases and people are impacted by those. And our job is to keep the public safe from those pathogens as well as just from those majority of those mosquito bites, right? And it's, you know, we're paid to do that, to control those mosquitoes. And we do it in a way that's safe and effective. So we're going to keep protecting the citizens of Salt Lake City.
So we'll focus on preventing disease in humans. I'll mention that the district has said that they're also trying to prevent the spread of pathogens carried by mosquitoes that impact pets. But just on the topic of West Nile virus, that's a mosquito-borne illness that first appeared in the United States in 1999. In their press conference and in a 60-page report, the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment say that they see the spraying of pesticides as an overreaction to a very rare threat.
We must not allow a cure worse than the disease. The incidence of severe outcomes from West Nile virus is so low that preventing those outcomes should not be allowed to eclipse the long list of other health and environmental concerns from pesticide use.
The report released by Dr. Mensch's group raising concerns about pesticide use is titled Mosquito Pesticide Spraying, Another Downwinder Threat to Utahns. Downwinder there is a reference to the people exposed to radioactive fallout from nuclear tests in the West, especially at the Nevada test site. And the report takes particular aim at aerial spraying of the northwest quadrant of Salt Lake City in and around the Great Salt Lake's wetlands. You may have read or heard on the news that there was a plan in the works where the Air Force might have been dropping the pesticides free of charge so that pilots could get low-altitude flying experience. That plan got nixed after opposition from groups including the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, Great Salt Lake Audubon, and the West Side Coalition. They were concerned about the potential environmental impacts and about the potential impact on human health from both direct and indirect consequences of spraying pesticides.
Pesticide spraying over the northwest quadrant has a much larger impact on air quality than the public or the Salt Lake Mosquito Abatement District appreciates. The district has even implied that aerial pesticide spraying does not affect human health. They have asserted that this type of spraying, quote, would not exceed local standards for air emissions and would not result in nonconformance with the Clean Air Act, unquote, when in fact there are proven adverse health consequences from spraying. I'd like to start by establishing that pesticide mixtures contain solvents that release high rates of volatile organic compounds. And from now on, I'll just refer to those as VOCs. Studies have shown VOCs in the air and soil increase significantly after pesticide spraying, and levels of these harmful compounds don't return to pre-spray baseline levels for 1 to 2 days. It's also important to understand that VOCs are a precursor of ozone and will serve as a significant source of summertime ozone. Furthermore, spraying for mosquitoes happens in summer and early fall when warm temperatures enhance the volatilization of VOCs and thereby allow VOCs to increase ozone as well. So to reiterate, these pesticides release VOCs, they increase ozone levels every time that spraying occurs. Unfortunately for Utahns, this will result in poorer air quality. And when spraying occurs multiple times in the summer, that means our air quality is made worse for weeks out of the year.
That, by the way, is Dr. Tom Nelson, an ER physician in Salt Lake City. He went on to detail a number of negative health outcomes that result from poor air quality, like an increased risk for heart attacks, strokes, and for increased mortality in general. And he also said that a troubling component of all of this had to do with who is bearing the burden of pollution more generally, and how the spraying of pesticides might contribute to environmental inequality.
Finally, there's also the issue of environmental justice. Salt Lake communities that are on the west side, North Salt Lake and West Bountiful, near the airport, near oil refineries, near the major freeways, and soon to be neighbors of the inland port, are already at significantly increased risk and are already victims of environmental injustice. Multiple events of aerial pesticide spraying would add to the already disproportionate toxic air pollution burden borne by the nearby residents of the west side, North Salt Lake and Bountiful. Pesticide spraying from the district in the northwest quadrant will make that even worse, as pesticides are at the top of the list of environmental neurotoxins.
Returning to aerial spraying of the wetlands around the Great Salt Lake, Air Force involvement or not, aerial spraying on Salt Lake City's far west side, out in and around the site of the Utah Inland Port, that spraying has been going on for years, and it will continue. Because, as Greg White, assistant director of the Salt Lake City Mosquito Abatement District, says, that's where the bulk of the mosquitoes are.
So in our case with Salt Lake City, right, we've got the mountains up on the east side and our wetlands are way out to the west. And so we can do most of our adult mosquito control, and actually the vast majority of all our mosquito control is done west of the city, away from the residential areas. And so there's very minimal chance of any of that pesticide going to the residential populated areas.
There are various other parts of the story that we haven't gotten to yet, but I want to zero in on a couple of things. One is that the doctors, and other environmental groups actually, say that they are concerned that the pesticides being sprayed by the Salt Lake City Mosquito Abatement District will harm other insects, and then, you know, other types of animals that eat those insects. Think back to that DDT story.
Pesticide spraying has adverse impacts on beneficial insects, bird populations, wildlife, the ecosystem of the Great Salt Lake, and beyond.
So what does the Mosquito Abatement District say about how it prevents other insects and wildlife from being impacted by these insecticides?
Yeah, that's a good question, because the active ingredients that are used within those adult control products or adult mosquito control products are some of the same ingredients that are used to control other insects as well. And so what we do is we have a few different things to really minimize our impact on other insects. So first off is our timing. So mosquitoes are active pretty much around sunset and through the night a little bit, and then up at sunrise again. So we really time our applications to do that after sunset time. And fortunately, that's when most pollinators like bees are not very active at that time. And they're go in to sequester themselves into another have like their hive or another place where there'd be much less opportunity for exposure to these droplets. So first is the timing that we do. The second, as I mentioned, we use these extremely small droplets, much smaller than something like in an agriculture setting where they're really trying to coat the vegetation and have something that stays there for a long time where they can kill these large insects or hard-bodied insects and have it really stay and persist in that environment for a long time to protect the crops. So we're trying to get these extremely small droplets that are just big enough to kill mosquitoes, but not large enough to kill a much larger insect. And we want them to then dissipate in the environment quickly. So they break down extremely rapidly and should be pretty much gone the next day. And then the third thing that we do is the volume or the amount that we use as we use, it's called ultra low volume or ULV spraying. So typically we do about 0.75 ounces per acre. So you know, less than a shot glass per football field. We spread that out in that extremely small volume for the size that we're treating.
I mentioned that there was a second point I wanted to get to. It's the trickier one to tackle because it has to do with a purported link between one class of pesticide widely used in the United States and autism.
Pesticides in general, including those used by the district, represent a widespread risk to human health, even at low doses, especially for fetuses and infants. At the top of a long list of health concerns is neurotoxicity, including increasing the risk of autism. Utah has one of the highest rates of autism in the nation, afflicting one in every 32 Utah boys. Our community leaders should be doing everything they can to reduce that risk. Instead, we are ignoring environmental exposures like air pollution and pesticides that research clearly indicates are among many toxins that contribute to this often debilitating disorder. For this 60-page report, we reviewed the findings of over 200 studies. I will mention just one study presented to the American Academy of Pediatrics that most closely approximates our situation in Salt Lake City. A statistical study found that aerial spraying with just one of the two pesticides used by the Salt Lake City District was associated with an increase in rates of autism of 37% in zip codes in New York that were within 2.5 kilometers of aerial spraying.
So some research pointing to a correlation between exposure to certain chemical compounds in pesticides and autism. It's research, by the way, that the Mosquito Abatement District's Greg White doesn't put too much stock in.
So I've read the paper. So it's just an observational study, which observational studies cannot make any conclusions, right? They can just try to generate some associations or correlations, which then you may want to look at more in the future. And there hasn't been similar studies since that one paper. There's been some other studies looking at pesticide use, but it was in agriculture use, which is quite a bit different. I think I described that previously, just with the way the amounts that they're applying, over 10 times greater, much larger droplets, much more persistent, and many, many more different classes of insecticides. So as far as looking at this aerial adult mosquito control, this is the only paper that's done anything. Like I said, no similar studies. Different class than what we use from the air, different class of insecticide. There's a number of drawbacks to that paper or shortcomings. You know, autism, it's not really known well what causes it, right? I mean, there's a number of factors people are trying to figure out. So one theory, it has to do with there's something that occurs while the fetus is developing within the mother. And that could have something happens in that situation, which allows autism to be more prevalent if they're predisposed to it for genetic circumstances. In this case, we don't know where the mothers were pregnant, like what so they know that the area where the kids were studied was the area where they knew if there was adult mosquito control or not, but they don't know where the actual mothers carried their baby, where the fetus development occurred. The authors say maybe in that area where there was more adult mosquito control by air, there was also more West Nile virus, and maybe that had something to do with it. West Nile virus is a neuroinvasive disease as well. And so maybe there was, but most of the time it's asymptomatic. So over 80% of the time, people don't know they're infected. So if there was pregnant mothers who were infected, never even knew they were sick with West Nile virus, that could potentially be another reason why that area that had the adult mosquito control, maybe there was more autism rates. So there's a number of shortcomings, definitely no conclusions being made, but it was some observations and we'll wait to see if more studies follow this up. I mean, like I said, the EPA constantly evaluates new literature. And if we always follow whatever their recommendations are. So if the EPA and CDC make changes to their recommendations in anything, then we'd follow them. But the vast weight of scientific literature shows that the mosquito control products, when used according to the label, are safe for all people, including these vulnerable populations.
I wish that I could tell you precisely what you should think about this topic, but the reality is I can't. Obviously, the Mosquito Abatement District has a vested interest in continuing the work that they do, But while they proceed forward with plans to do just that, I'll mention that their board recently voted to study how far the pesticides they spray spread and to what extent they accumulate. On the other side of things, the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment is launching a petition drive to collect signatures to try to convince mosquito abatement to enact that moratorium on spraying pesticides. I get the feeling that this is a topic we'll be returning to on a future show. Just before we wrap up here, I want to return to something that I briefly mentioned earlier in the show, the chemical compound pesticide DDT. This week, marine researchers in California revealed that they'd found possibly as many as 25,000 barrels of DDT, hundreds of tons of the poison, in a dump on the floor of the ocean off of Catalina Island. The barrels were dumped there in the 1940s, and, well, needless to say, biologists are concerned about the impact it's having and has been having on marine wildlife. Not the most uplifting note to end the show on, but there you have it. What are your thoughts on all of this? What did I miss in this show? Email your comments to comments@kcpw.org or post them on KCPW's Facebook page, where we will shortly be featuring this show. That does it for In the Hive today from KCPW, a listener-supported, entirely independent, local public radio resource. Find podcasts at kcpw.org or through whatever app you use to listen. Our theme music is by Andrew Shaw. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for tuning in. Both Sides of the Aisle is coming up next.